Well, good evening. My name is Kurt Walters. I'm lead pastor here at Cross Point, and it's great to have you here on this Christmas Eve evening. You know, I don't know about you, but I love everything about Christmas. I love the songs. I love the movies. I mean, I love the movies that have nothing to do with the original Christmas story. I mean, you know, they don't have to have that. I mean, the festiveness, everything about this time of year, I love. And yet tonight, we're going to take a look at the original Christmas story. We're going to take a look at the Christmas story that we just heard there as reported from the Gospel according to Luke, and how God invites us into it, how God actually includes us in the story. And so, you know, I don't know where you're at spiritually this evening. I don't know if you're someone who, you know, is newer to Cross Point, or you're not a believer. You're just looking to maybe get a little bit of Christmas cheer. Maybe you're here tonight and you're really trying to figure out the possibility of how God actually lowered himself down in the form of flesh. Or maybe, you know, you're somewhere in the midst of that realm. You know, we believe this is a place for people to explore spiritualities regardless of where you are. So we're glad you're here. I know that there's others of us here this evening who have received Jesus, who are followers of Jesus, and tonight we're kind of remembering the significant event that took place, and we're glad you're here as well. And so, you know, it's an interesting juxtaposition when you think about it. I mean, we go from, you know, Carol of the Bells. I mean, how about Carol of the Bells, PJ and the band? Yeah. You know, we go from Carol of the Bells to, you know, to this Middle Eastern view and a narration of a very heavy portrayal of the Christmas story, probably much closer to what that first Christmas was actually like. And it was paired with some of the scenes from the movie The Nativity. And, you know, over the last few weeks here at Cross Point, we've been exploring how these stories often clash. How, you know, our perceptions of what the Christmas story is all about and the original Christmas story, as it actually is reported, you know, there's somewhat of a tension in these two perceptions, you know, and we're okay with that. We live in that tension. In fact, it's often in that tension of the original story and everything we want it to be is where we actually find that flicker of hope. And so tonight we're going to be taking a look at that. In fact, a few weeks ago, second week of the series, I just off cuff kind of mentioned that, you know, Mary was probably somewhere around the age of like 13 when she gave birth to, you know, Jesus. And there was like this gasp. People were like, ooh, 13. I mean, that's not good, right? And you know, in fact, some of you are probably gasping at that right now because you've never heard that before. But you know, Mary was probably around the age of 13 when she gave birth to this baby that changed the world. And you know, and it's not really it wasn't an odd thing back then. People were betrothed back then. It's just kind of a normal way of, it's what happened when people were engaged to be married. They married at a very young age, and without specific instruction, that would have just been a normal thing for people of that particular day to have done. And so, you know, as I think about that, I thought, you know, I think of like 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds that I know today, and I'm thinking, you know, these are people who are much more willing to be interrupted and emptied than those of us who are older. And I put myself in that category. You know, as I think about that, I think, you know, the older you get, if your life is like mine, I mean, you want things way more planned out. You need tons more of information, you know, to make decisions. You want your plans to come to fruition. You know, you're much less apt to just kind of be interrupted with whatever your plans are and totally reorient in a different direction. In fact, sometimes I think that that's why God does, you know, really significant things through teenagers, through young people today, because they're much more apt to be interrupted. In fact, this is what the story of Christmas is about. I mean, as we think about this event that took place 2,000 and some years ago, it was truly a story of interruption. I mean, as we think about some of the figures in the story, we think about Mary. And, you know, here's Mary. I mean, here's a young girl, 13, 14. She's planning to be married to her handsome boy named Joe. And, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, she finds out she's with child. And this is not a kosher thing back then. I don't know how it is today. It's not overly accepted as well today. But back then, I mean, this was a big deal. And she kind of initially at least resists. I mean, you have to think, so she pondered these things, and yet immediately you have to think she had plans. I mean, she had plans of what kind of ceremony that was going to look like. She, you know, wanted to get the family established, and yet she allowed herself in that moment to be interrupted and literally emptied herself of her plans, that God's plan may begin to take place in her life. And then you had her husband, Joseph, who, you know, and on the flip of that, I mean, he hears this news. He hears, hey, you know, your wife-to-be, she's expecting, and by the way, it's not yours. I mean, you know, he had plans to quietly just divorce her. I mean, those were his plans. He thought, you know, I'm not going to bring public shame to her. I mean, she has enough of that already. And then all of a sudden, an angel showed up. And have you ever noticed in the Bible, I don't think movies do it justice. Angels don't, you know, they're not like Gerber baby-looking little angels. I mean, well, these aren't like, you know, little harp-toting, you know, poetic singing, round-faced Gerber babies in clouds. I mean, angels were warriors back then. I mean, angels were in the midst of this cosmic battle that's taking place. You know, fighting this cosmic battle in the heavens. I mean, angels show up, and have you ever noticed how people get freaked out immediately? I mean, one shows up, and they immediately like, whoa, I didn't come to like hammer on you. I'm just here to report some news. And this angel shows up to Joseph, and immediately Joseph listens, and he's interrupted. He changes his plans. His plans to divorce Mary, to no longer marry her, he re-embraces those. And so we see that the story is one of interruption. In fact, a few years ago, I was thinking it was probably 7, 8, maybe 9 years ago. I remember spending a Christmas in Cincinnati where my wife's family lives. And my brother-in-law, it was his first Christmas with our extended family there. He just married into the family, and we were sitting around Christmas getting ready to open gifts. And a snowstorm had come in, and I remember it was snowing pretty hard. And this was his first time through the winter season in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati isn't all that different than here, but they do operate differently than us. And so, you know, we're sitting around, and he had kind of the same response to his first snowstorm in Cincinnati that I remember having when Julie and I were dating and we were in Cincinnati. And we're sitting there and he's like, why aren't they plowing the stinking roads? And I'm like, well, exactly. That's what I say every time I come here. Why aren't they plowing the roads? I mean, it's like, you know, the snow's falling and the best thing you could find, the closest thing to a plow was like a salt shaker on the back of a truck, right? And these things are going around and we had plans. I mean, we're celebrating with the family, but we still had gifts to buy and we had plans to travel home later that day. And I was thinking about this, and I knew why they weren't plowing the roads. I mean, I know there's like some financial stresses in the community, and they didn't want to put the millions of dollars in the man hours it was going to take to, you know, clear the roads. But it was an interruption. I mean, it was definitely because when that happens, I mean, the people just kind of went to a crawl, and it was hard to get out, and you didn't want to travel down to the malls. And yet, you know, I've noticed something about myself. What I've noticed is that now I kind of enjoy the interruptions. I don't know about you, but whenever it snows and I don't see the plows out, I mean, I start jumping up and down. I'm like, all right, this is going to be a positive interruption. It's going to be like a vacation that we didn't plan for a day, because when you're interrupted, it's like you put your normal to-do list, the thing you had on task for that day, you just kind of put that aside, right? And it's like you just get a free day. And you know, as I thought about that, I thought, you know, for so many of us, when we think about this whole idea of spiritual greatness, we think that lies in our plans. And yet whenever I read the story of God and the story that God includes us in and the story of Christmas, and I look at this interruption, I begin to realize that, you know, God, spiritual greatness is always when God interrupts us and we empty ourselves and we open ourselves up to that new plan that God may have. And when this interruption comes, I mean, you know, and we open ourselves up to it, I mean, incredible things begin to happen. It's not normal that we have kids in our service here tonight. I mean, I'm looking around, seeing some of the kids in here. I'm thinking, you know, think of the kids in here. I mean, how many of us actually planned on having kids when we had kids? I mean, think about that for a moment. And kids, don't go home and ask your parents, did you plan on me? That's not a good Christmas Eve question, all right? But think about it. I mean, how many of us actually planned on having the kids that are sitting with us? And as you think about your life, if you have kids in your family or in your home, even if those kids weren't planned, you look back and you think, man, that was just perfect timing. Perfect timing. It's amazing how God's timing, how He interrupts us on a regular basis. And Christmas is just a big interruption, right? I mean, if Christmas feels like a major interruption in your life, then it is. I mean, that's God actually designed it that way. He actually designed it for you to be interrupted, have a regular holiday, once a year. It comes on the 25th every year, and yet you're surprised by it for some reason. I mean, you get behind, and you can't believe it's already here. And yet God designed it to be that holy interruption. And the question is, when the interruption comes, you know, are we open to Him? That's the big question I've been wrestling through over these last few weeks. You know, how am I open and responding to God's interruptions? Because usually when God interrupts, there's something way bigger that He wants to do than just what I think it's about. In fact, take a look at another version of this story here. We find this in Matthew chapter 2. And this is another perspective. This is the gospel according to Matthew, another writer. And he gives us kind of another look in at the events that were around this particular event. He says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw a star when it rose, and we have come to worship Him. And down to verse 10 and following. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshiped Him. And what's interesting about this to me is, you know, the Magi, I mean, these were busy men. I mean, these were men who were advisors to the kings. I mean, they were not lacking anything on their plate. And yet, the star began to arise, and they immediately began to orient themselves toward this manger. And what else sticks out right here is, it says, on coming to the house. And so what we begin to realize is, they didn't come and worship Jesus when he was sitting in the feed trough. He was no longer in the manger. It says he was in the house. So he's moved out of the manger by now. He's actually living in a house in Bethlehem. So he's probably somewhere around the age of 1.5 to 2 years old. I mean, this wasn't just months that these wise men who were seeking him waited. This was like a year or more that they waited, that they allowed their lives to be interrupted in an interrupted state. And they continued to pursue this one who God pointed them toward. And you know, as I thought about that, I thought, you know, sometimes, you know, we open ourselves up, maybe this time of year, even to spiritual things. We're like, you know, I want to experience you right now, God. I mean, you know, sometimes we're like, you know, I want to experience God now. I want a spiritual experience where, you know, in these next few days, I really want this Christmas to be that way. And as if we can pre-direct or predetermine when we're going to have these things. And you know, one of the things I've discovered, you know, through my years is that, you know, God doesn't work on my time frame. As much as I try to convince him of it, God does not work on Kurt's time frame. And I think it's especially true, you know, in those moments, especially when we're dealing with difficult circumstances. I mean, you know, I think of some of the friends that I have that, you know, right now are going through cancer, going through really, you know, severe, you know, marriage issues and financial issues. And I think, you know, sometimes we have this improper view of what a flicker of hope actually looks like. I mean, the Christmas story is all about hope. We have to be real about what it really is. You know, sometimes people say, man, if you just pray harder, man, everything's going to turn out great, and you know, God will heal you and you'll hang on. Or, you know, if you just have a little stronger faith, I mean, if you just trust a little more, then everything's going to go up and to the right. And, you know, and I begin to get this perspective, you know, that maybe hope isn't expecting somebody who's in the latter forms of cancer, really struggling through a difficult financial period, or you know, dealing with some difficult family situations. Maybe hope isn't expecting them to not give in. Maybe that's just a lack of reality to think that. But the writer in Hebrews actually talks about this hope. I mean, if this event is about hope, then we have to be clear about what this hope is about. Take a look at Hebrews chapter 6. This writer gives us a really interesting look at what hope is. He says, we have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. And so what he's saying right there is, you might be right on the other side of the curtain. Your hope isn't maybe that you're not going to have any pain. Your hope isn't that maybe you're not gonna you know, experience the struggle that you're in. Your hope maybe isn't just that you're not going to be healed. Maybe there's something more. Maybe your hope, as this verse says right here, is that there's a Savior who's gone before you. Maybe your hope is found that Jesus never calls us towards something that he's never done himself. And so our hope, as Hebrews says, is that our Savior has gone before us. And amidst that, he's gone ahead of you, and he's lived for you, he's died for you, he's conquered for you, and he's waiting right there on the other side of the curtain. Maybe that's hope. Maybe hope isn't, you know, I hope things get better, because, you know, sometimes they just don't. I mean, if I can be really real, sometimes they just don't. And you know, we don't like to deal with death, right? I mean, that's kind of this inanimate thing. We don't like to think about this, and yet the hope we find that this story, this baby lying in a manger, is about, tells us that in the end we actually win, because our Savior, the one who lowered himself down in the form of flesh and love, has actually gone before us. And that seems a bit final, right? I mean, it seems a bit final, but it's reality. As I think about that, I thought, you know, well, the last time I checked, the death rate's still hovering right around 99.8% or so. You know, you're all going to experience it at one point or another. And yet, you know, earlier this fall, you know, if you're into technology at all, you know that we lost one of the greatest minds that we've known in the last decades. You know, Steve Jobs unfortunately died earlier this fall. I mean, you talk about a guy who was just an absolute blessing to all of us. I mean, if you have one of these right here, I mean, you know, he was a blessing. I mean, somebody who technologically just, you know, could create things and do things and moved our world forward. And I think the last time I looked, he was somewhere around $8 billion was his worth right around the time that he died. And yet the person who was most creative, had access to more money than anyone knew what to do with, and literally had access to the technology when it was on the verge, I mean, before you and I even saw it, and yet even he could not stop it. And I was reading an article earlier this fall, actually it was on Halloween Day, and I was in New York Times, and it was talking about, you know, Steve Jobs' final words. Maybe you heard about it. You know, Steve Jobs wasn't really a spiritual person. He's very much a romantic, very much a romantic. I mean, relationships, romance, I mean, that drove Steve Jobs, and yet the people closest to him would say in those latter months as he was approaching, what he began to realize was the end. He began to become really attuned to spiritual things. He became really attuned to spiritual conversations. In fact, he even commented that he was becoming a spiritual person. And he began to invite advisors and people who were some of those spiritual advisors to leaders in our world to come and spend time with him. And you know, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to speculate where he was on that. I don't know where he ended up on that spectrum. It's not my job to do that. But as I was reading his sister's eulogy for him, which his sister was a biological sister. He was adopted, by the way, in case you didn't know that. So he didn't meet his biological sister until later in life. And they became very close friends. Of course, they're brother and sister. But you know, she had the opportunity to present his eulogy. And as she did that, as she came to the close, she began to talk about his final words earlier that day. She said they were monosyllables and they were repeated three times. So she says, as he was there lying on his bed, he looked at his children, he looked at his adopted sister, and he looked at his lifelong partner, his wife, and then he began to look past them. And he just began to mumble, "Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow." You know, there's something about this story. I mean, there's something about the hope that we experience at Christmas, whether it's for the here and the now, whether for something more that, you know, we're just drawn to. Have you ever asked yourself, I mean, why are we so drawn to this story? Why this time of year do we just kind of order our entire lives around this event right here? You know, I think it's because the Christmas story is God's story. I mean, why is it that we're drawn to the Beauty and the Beast? I mean, why? You know, for me, that's like my favorite fairy tale. I don't know if it's because that's the first one I took my wife to when we were dating, you know, and went to like the Beauty and the Beast on ice, you know, or I used to dance with my daughters, you know, to the ballad song, you know, in our front room every night we'd watch. Why are we drawn to fairy tales like this? I mean, Beauty and the Beast has endured through generations. I mean, decades upon decades. And, you know, why is that? And I think it's because it's a primal story. I mean, it's God's story locked inside of us. Why is it that we're drawn to Prince Charming and this princess who's locked in and kind of inside this toad? I mean, why is it that we love this story? Because it's a part of God's story that's inside of us. I mean, why is it that, you know, Braveheart will forever be the most popular, you know, DVD 20 years back that men, at least, will put on their shelves in their video collection? You know, because it's a story of rescue. I mean, you know, it's a story of somebody coming in from the outside. It's God's story. And some of you are going, whoa, Beauty and the Beast, I mean, Prince Charming, I mean, Braveheart, you're saying these are God's story? Well, kind of. I mean, they're kind of God's story. I mean, you see, there are classic elements to every story, every classic story that all of us connect with. And these classic elements, God has implanted those elements inside of us. And when we hear stories like this, there's something that connects. The hope of those stories connects with us because we're a part of that story. I mean, think about it for a moment. Beauty and the Beast. I mean, how is Beauty and the Beast a part of God's story? Well, I mean, you have the beauty, right? You have the beauty, and the beauty believes in the beast, right? And so you have this story of God. I mean, that's what it is. It's the story of God. You have the story of God. You have the beauty, who in this case is God or Jesus, and he looks at people who are beastish like you and I, who have rough spots, who have addictions, who have parts of our lives that just aren't pretty or attractive. And yet he looks deeper than that. And he's the one person who believes that beyond all of that lies some kind of beauty. And we're drawn to this because there's some kind of spiritual connection right there. And we don't even realize, but that's the story of God right there. I mean, how about the story of, you know, Prince Charming and the frog that, you know, he kisses and she turns into a beautiful princess? You know, why is that so fascinating to us? I think it's because, you know, we wonder, could there be a person who actually believes in me, a person who actually will kiss me? You know, when all others look away, when all others look the other direction, I mean, is there somebody who will actually come close? We like that story. It's a story of hope. And Jesus breaks through this into this world as the Prince Charming, and he comes to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. I mean, he touches us. He gets close. He affirms. He encourages. I mean, why is it the Braveheart figure, this is for the guys. Why is it the Braveheart? The women are shaking their heads. They're like, I have no idea. Why is it the Braveheart figure applies with so many of us? Because it's a story of rescue. I mean, we see this idea that there are these forces that come against us and they will do battle with us. They're going to do battle against us. And we need somebody from the outside to come and to rescue us. And this rescuer comes and he does for us what we cannot do for ourselves in ways that we cannot free ourselves. And again, we see the story of God. We see the story of the manger hidden in each of these classic stories. You see, it's implanted in our hearts. I mean, it's a story of a God who cares so much for each one of us that He sent His Son into the world. He sent His beauty into the world to come into the world to save. You know, to go after frogs and beasts and addicts and the unforgivables. I mean, you know, for those of us who think, man, if they only knew who I really was on the inside, if they ever break through and see who I really am. And it's like the beauty comes and He looks beyond that and He comes close and He sees something more. You know, when I was getting ready this evening, I was putting on what my kids call my elf shoes. It's like Christmas time, so all of a sudden my pointed shoes become elf shoes. And I thought, well, it's Christmas. I probably ought to, like, you know, buff them up a little bit. You know, probably ought to shine them up a little bit. So I'm, you know, dressed in my, you know, bathroom. I'm buffing these things up. And I don't know if you ever had this. I've got really heavy shoe polish in a metal squeeze bottle. And so I squeeze it, and it breaks and comes out the backside, and I get it all over my hand right there. And I'm going, I got to get up and teach, and I use my hands a lot, and everybody's going to see. I'm washing it, trying to get it off, and I don't know if you can still see it, but there's still like a residue there. And I thought, well, you know, that's actually interesting, because this is actually kind of what happens. I mean, this is the story that we love right here. But, you know, there are certain things that come into our lives that just kind of blacken us, that make us feel less than beautiful, less than the princess, less than the prince. And there are things that we can't change. I mean, as much as I tried to scrub this, short of going out and getting the gasoline out, which was going to be a whole other issue, you know, I thought, you know, this thing is here. I mean, it's on me. I mean, it's there. I mean, you see it. I don't like it, but you see it. And yet, the beauty comes and He sees through this. And He begins to remove from me the things that I can't do for myself. I thought, yeah, that's ironic. That's the story of Christmas right there. And so you see, this story is implanted in us, and we're drawn to it. And there's something about this event every year that our hearts are drawn to. We long for it. We hope for it. And maybe even we'll allow it to interrupt us to see if there's something more in store that God wants to do through this event that happened so many years ago. And so in just a few minutes, we're gonna sing a couple more songs. And as we sing, you know, I want you to just kind of soak in and allow this moment to be an interruption amidst the busyness. And just kind of take in this story of hope, this story of interruption, this story of people who, when they encounter it, they begin to empty themselves, to become filled in a new way. And we're gonna get to Silent Night in a few moments. I know that's the moment the kids are all waiting for. It's one of my favorite moments too. And so, you know, you can grab your candles and pull those out. But, you know, something very profound is going to happen as you hold these candles this evening. You know, just as this light breaks into the darkness, so God, the beauty, breaks into the hearts and the lives of men and women. And God has broken into the world in a unique way, in the form of a baby who lowered Himself down in the form of flesh and love. That's all He was, flesh and love. And that light just slowly began to spread. And it reached into places that were those untouchable places, those unseeable places, those places that we hide, those places that we say, man, if they only knew. And that light actually comes in and comes close. And that's what God does. He comes close. And here we are today, some 2,000 some years later, and it's still touching us. It's still bringing hope. It's still breaking through. The beauty is still breaking through the beast to bring hope and a newness. God, I'm praying right now that in these next moments, that there would just be a refreshing influence that would just sweep over this place. God, I pray for every person, for every friendship, for every marriage. God, I pray for every relationship in this room. God, I pray that in some way, your grace would just cover every single one of us. God, I pray that in these next 24 hours as we celebrate this event that changed human history, God, I just pray that you would take each one of us to a new place. God, that you would help us to see that you invite us to receive from you. We would allow you to come close. We would allow you to interrupt the routine of our next 24 hours. That you might come close, that you might embrace us in a way that maybe we've never experienced before. So God, allow us to be interrupted in these next moments. And God, as we celebrate tonight, tomorrow, God, I just pray that you would refresh us and that your grace would just flow.